This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
Hi, I'm Wes Kao, and I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
I am big on cohort-based courses and cohort-based learning right now. I've been in a few. I'm running one with the Elite Time course, and we've just finished our second round as of this recording and are starting to prepare for the third cohort, and that's why I think it's timely to have Wes Kao on the program. As co-founder of the Alt MBA, Wes helped create the modern cohort-based education movement with Seth Godin, who's also been on this program. She's led over 150 launches for Fortune 500 brands and startups and is recognized as a leading expert in B2C marketing. That's business to consumer marketing. Now she's taking the category she helped create to the next level with her new startup, Maven, the world's first digital platform for cohort-based courses. We talk a bit about Maven and a whole bunch of other elements around cohort-based courses and training. Lots of stuff to get into, so let's get into it. Here is a productive conversation that I had with Wes Kao. Enjoy. Wes, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yes, yeah, same.
So, first off, for those that don't know you, because you were did you work really behind the scenes with Alt MBA and stuff like that? Like, I want to get into that right out of the gate, because the reason I knew you when we started to talk about like having you on the show was, I'm like, oh, Alt MBA, and Seth's been on the show. And it was like, oh, let's dig in a little bit here. So can you share a little bit about yourself right out of the gate so that the listener can say, oh, that's why Wes is here today?
Yeah, for sure. I'm co-founder of Maven, a new startup for cohort-based courses that makes it really easy for anyone to build a live, engaging online course. We're funded by Andreessen Horowitz and First Round Capital. We've raised about $25 million so far. We're about a year old. Before this, I co-founded the Alt MBA with Seth Godin, mm-hmm. and built it from scratch. It was just us two in the very beginning, grew it to a team of over 50 people with thousands of alumni and students in 45 countries, 500 cities, and really kicked off the entire category of what's now today called cohort-based courses. And so lots of experience in online education, ed tech, building teams, and yeah, excited to be here talking to your entrepreneur listeners.
So it's that was the other thing. As soon as I found out about Maven, and I actually have attended a Maven webinar, and I've seen some of the stuff that was going on behind the scenes, because we've done two cohorts. We've done a beta run, and then we did a pilot one, cohort one. It initially was called Total Time Crafting. We're rebranding it a little bit, but it's been cobbled together, as you know, by a bunch of different kind of, you know, different tools and so on and so forth. So I want to know, first off, out of the gate, I mean, we can talk about the building of Maven and why you did it, but I want to know first, like, why do you think that learning in a cohort, because we've seen the rise of that with things like Linking Your Thinking with Nick Milo and the like, Tiago Forte's got his, and there's a lot more out there. Why do you think that learning in a cohort has seen such a rise, as opposed to, say, you know, one-on-one coaching or, you know, taking courses through, you know, like these online learning platforms where you're doing it one-on-one or you're watching video courses. Why has the rise of cohorts kind of started to take place?
Yeah, I love that you mentioned Tiago. He was one of my clients before starting Maven. Mm-hmm. David Prell was also one of my clients. Professor Scott Galloway from Section 4, all early adopters in this course space. And you're right that there are a ton of courses popping onto the scene now. And the reason is they're great for instructors and creators who are teaching the courses, and also great for learners and students who are taking the courses. So on both sides, there's a lot of improvements compared to both traditional higher education and also MOOCs, massive open online courses like Skillshare and Udemy. So if you think about a Udemy course, for example, it's a solo activity where you're watching basically a set of pre-recorded videos by yourself. There's no community, there's no accountability, there's no one who notices if you don't show up to something. And so what happens is a lot of people sign up for courses with high hopes, and a tiny sliver of people actually finish them. So the completion rate is 7 to 10%. Yeah. A recent MIT study said 3 to 6%. So I've personally, you know, I have a calligraphy course somewhere, gathering digital dust from 5 years ago, where I watched 10 minutes and said I would go back, and I never did. So that's a pretty common story. And, you know, flash forward to today with cohort-based courses. Cohort-based courses are a lot more engaging because you have a set start and end date. So automatically that in itself, the scarcity of a course that ends, makes people take it more seriously. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're paying a premium for a course also makes people take it more seriously. You know, if you're, it's kind of like going to the gym and having a personal trainer. I've already paid that person $75, I should show up, right? So same with a Udemy course. It's, you know, if it's $10, $15 and you don't do it, no skin off your back. But, you know, if you've paid $500 to $5,000 as a student, which that's the range of cohort-based courses, the price point range, then you're much more likely to take it seriously. So right off the bat, there are a couple levers that help learners stay more engaged. And then once you actually get in the course, the community of other like-minded learners are there to help keep you motivated, to keep you inspired. And you're not just watching videos together either. You're doing hands-on exercises, activities, projects. You're critiquing each other's work. You're giving each other feedback. So instead of, you know, let's say you're taking a sales course, instead of just watching a bunch of videos about sales, you're actually crafting a pitch or writing a you know, a cold email, and then critiquing each other's emails. Maybe the instructor picks a couple to live critique, and then you actually ship that email during the course, and then you learn from that feedback. So it's much more of the way that we actually all learn, which is, you know, simulating that on-the-job environment, simulating the practice that goes into actually learning. So that's on the learner side. Now, switching gears to the creator side.
Yeah, which I've done. I've done, like, the Skillshare course I have is like, it's, there is a small community, but it's so fragmented and so not connected as tightly. And because there's no, just real quick, there's no intimacy, right? You know what I mean? Like, when I did my cohort, like, people know me and we've chatted and there's that direct access. So I almost feel like when I did my cohort, I'm like, I'm more engaged. I'm more. So I want, yeah, I definitely want to hear the facilitation and the creator side, because as somebody who's taught one-on-one, which is very challenging and doesn't scale terribly well, but also the courses where you put on, like you said, the, you know, you're, I made a Skillshare course and there's lots of people that have taken it. It's got a really high rating and such, but there's been a hesitancy for me to create another one for the very reasons that you've mentioned. Let's lean into that.
Yeah, so there's a couple reasons why cohort-based courses are exciting for creators. So one is, overnight, it often becomes the biggest revenue stream for a creator. So if you are selling $15 Skillshare courses, you need to sell a lot of them to make the revenue that you want to make. Whereas if you're selling, you know, if you're selling a cohort-based course that's 10 to 100 times more expensive, you can really add a lot of value for your diehard fans and also make a great living without constantly trying to chase conversion numbers and clicks and just trying to get more people in your funnel. So that's a huge reason. We've had so far 10 creators who have done initial first cohorts that have made over $100,000 in a single cohort. So that's a cohort that's between 2 to 3 weeks long, yeah, making what a lot of creators make in a year. which is really amazing. And we've had dozens of creators who made over $10,000 in a single cohort. So I think the revenue potential is really, really exciting, and it frees up creators from needing to constantly chase volume through branded sponsorships or advertising or selling, you know, merch like stickers, socks, posters, sweatshirts. Like, you need to sell a lot of those things to make $100,000. Mm-hmm. So I think that the revenue potential is really, really exciting. That's one. I think the other is that it's really rewarding, as you mentioned, to get to know your diehard fans and the people that are at the heart of your community who want to learn from you, who want to engage with you, who want to engage with each other. And through the format of a cohort-based course, you're bringing them all together for this period of time, and you're engaging in this experience together. And I think the great thing about cohort-based courses too is that you as the instructor are not the end-all, be-all source of everything for the course. The fact that the other students are there and they're excited, they're motivated, they're they have similar values and mindsets. There's so much value in helping your community meet each other and attribute that goodwill to Mike. Like, Mike brought us together. This is awesome, right? Like, I met all my best friends from being in the Alt MBA, or I met all my best friends from, you know, and colleagues and new contacts from doing Section 4, Professor Galloway's course, or doing David Perel's course. So there's this giving back element to engaging with your diehard fans, and also being able to open the doors more deeply than you can a lot of times in either writing a newsletter or a podcast or a pre-recorded course, where you can kind of go where the motivation, the flow takes you. Like, if right. a certain cohort, right? Like, they really want to mm-hmm. learn, hey, Mike, like, this thing is super interesting right now, whether it's current events or, you know, whatever, like, this group just happens to want to dig into this thing. You have the flexibility to cater to that and follow that serendipity in a way that you can't as much with a pre-recorded course.
You know, as you were talking about this, I was thinking about the idea of what happened when I did my first one, the beta, and then I moved into the first round, the first official one, which I think we had about 10 people on. And then the next one that we're working on right now is going to have more people in it, because it's been sculpted. It's an evolving piece, which I also really like, because there's this static element. Like, my Skillshare course is great and people still take it, and I tried to make it as timeless as possible, but tech changes, things change, everything. You can make this so dynamic, and that's something that I think is really valuable about it. But what I want to ask now is, when people are building these sort of things, because we're seeing more and more, as we talked about, what are some of the common mistakes people are doing? Because they're getting enthusiastic about it, but when a creator's building something like this, what are some of the things that they're maybe not thinking about, or they don't have the experience with as they're building it, that you see happening, which is probably some of the reasons that led to you building Maven?
One of the biggest misconceptions and mistakes that first-time course creators make is comparing their first cohort with someone's 50th cohort. So you look at someone like David Perel, you look at someone like Tiago, you look at someone like Sean Puri or Pomp, Lee Jin, and you say, oh wow, like their courses look so strong, they look amazing. And a lot of these creators have been doing this for multiple cohorts. Mm-hmm. And so that the perfectionism that tends to set in when you expect perfection from your first cohort tends to be really paralyzing. So really, you know, I love what you said just now about how cohorts evolve, and you iterate from one cohort to the other. So one great example of that is the Maven Course Accelerator, which I teach. We're about to run our fourth cohort starting next week. And this is the fourth time that we've run it. We first started it in February. We did a alpha cohort with five instructors in our cohort. And we then did a beta with 10 people. Mm-hmm. And then we grew to 85 in our next cohort. Wow. And then our upcoming cohort has over 130 people. So just the progression, the progress from one cohort to the other, growing, you know, more than doubling from one cohort to another. And then the format changed too, based on mm-hmm. what we saw worked for people. So initially it was an intense 5-day sprint. And then it became 6 weeks. So we spread out that content. We ran it at 6 weeks twice. Mm-hmm. And then this upcoming cohort, we're shrinking it to 3 weeks to make it more accessible. We trimmed out a bunch of stuff that ended up not being that helpful for people, doubled down on stuff that was more helpful, turned stuff that could be done asynchronously into pre-recorded videos so that when we meet live Tuesdays and Thursdays, it's workshopping. It's all the stuff that you can only do live, debating, discussing, sharing your work, getting feedback from coaches. So this is just it's a great example. Even Maven, you know, we're the purveyors of core-based courses. Like, even we are constantly updating and iterating what our course is and what it can be based on what is best for our students and what they're telling us. And so one big thing, probably the biggest thing that first-time course creators should keep in mind is your first cohort is not the end-all be-all. It's right. Way better to do a smaller initial cohort, get something out there, and learn from real data points than to continue pontificating and analyzing and thinking about, is this the most perfect curriculum that you could possibly create?
I want to get into Maven now, the building of Maven, because clearly, and we talked about this, you know, the idea of cobbling different tools together, you know, Zoom and Circle and all these other, which are, they are fundamentally great. But I mean, even this, we're recording this on riverside.fm, whereas before I used Zoom and before that I used Skype. So you know, the tools evolve and tech evolves nonstop. What was the impetus for you to say, you know what, we need something that will better facilitate cohorts so that, as you just mentioned, some of that overthinking, the paralysis through analysis kind of stuff, because I think tools can be part of that. Oh, I have to have this and this and this and this, not just for the creator, but for the end user who's going, where are we meeting today? Where do we do this thing? I think that's so what led you to the point of saying, you know what, we need Maven. We need this platform that's going to make it easier, not just for the person making it, but for the person taking it.
I was creating core-based courses and have been for the past 5 to 6 years before starting Maven. Mm-hmm. And during this time, I was shocked at the level of administrative logistical effort that it took to create a core-based course. So when Seth Godin and I first started the Alt MBA, it was a completely new format. And we cobbled together Zoom, Slack, WordPress, email, Zapier to stitch it all together. Mm-hmm. And we got all these questions of, you know, when is the next session? Where do I find this recording? How do I do this? Where do I find my group for the week? And, you know, at that time, it kind of made sense because this was brand new.
Right.
But even over the last 5 years, even flash forward today, this is still the way that if you are creating Coursera, like, you are having to deal with cobbling together all of these different tools.
Absolutely.
And it just felt like, how have we not found something yet? How has something not been built yet to address this challenge and to create a central location, a central place where a creator can host and manage everything that they need about their course? You know, the more tools you have, the more likely something is to break.
Right.
I've personally spent hours debugging a Zap that stopped working for some random reason. And it's just like, you want to tear your hair out, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of creators are not, it's not that they're not technically savvy. A lot of them are, but it's not their main strength. Like, they
right.
didn't become a creator because they liked, you know, messing around with these different tools. They became a creator because they want to teach what they know and connect to their audience. And they're really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when Gog and I got reconnected last summer, literally just a year ago, we just had our 1 year anniversary, last summer / fall, you know, Gog and I just gotten back from spending 2 years abroad after mm-hmm. shutting down his last company, Sprig. And, you know, he reached out to me and said, hey Wes, I, you know, just got back to the States. I'm thinking about starting a new edtech company. And I've been hearing about these live synchronous courses called core-based courses. And, everyone I talked to about them mentioned you. So I told them, I already know Wes, we went to high school together, we went to college together, I'm just going to reach out to Wes directly and talk to her. And so, you know, we started, you know, we jumped on a call and we started riffing about just how broken the tech tooling, the tooling that was available to core-based course creators was. And we realized that there was a huge opportunity to work together to build something that could serve creators and take off all of this slog, like all this administrative slog. Let's just remove that for creators. Let's have technology do it,
mm-hmm.
right? And so creators
yep.
can focus on what they want. And so that was the start of Maven. And what we're building is this central place where a creator has everything that they need, starting all the way from the landing page that you share with your prospective students to the application process and the application flow to payments to the student portal that you can give to your students. So they have a place where they can log in, they can see a calendar, they can see a fellow student database with who else is in the course, what's everyone's background, clicking out to people's LinkedIn profiles, see, you know, people's photos. They can see where to log in to the live sessions. They can see the homework assignments. They can see the curriculum that's being dripped out every week. So it's much more organized and easy for your students. And the instructor has a dashboard where they can see, hey, here are all the students that are coming in. Here are people who have paid yet. Here are people who have not. And in the future, more data around here are students who are falling behind. Here are students who have submitted every single project. Here are the coaches that are assigned to each student, right? So so much more visibility and transparency into what do my students want? How are people doing so that I as an instructor can better serve my students?
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. So as cohort-based courses increase in, not size, but in accessibility, because there's lots of people, again, as we mentioned off the top, more and more people are doing them because they seem to be like the hot topic right now. Like there's a lot more people that I've noticed, at least in my space. And I think that's the other thing too, is I'm coming at it from the vantage point of a creator, whereas, you know, and you know how it is, when you see something that's happening, you tend to see it everywhere, but then the bulk of people are like, what's a cohort-based course? Because a lot of people don't know what that means initially, right? What do you think, how does someone avoid this trap of, well, so many people are already doing a cohort-based course, so who am I to do one? Or there's so many, the market's saturated, et cetera. How do they keep from falling into those pitfalls? Not just the analysis one that you're talking about, which I totally agree with, because it's way easier to build a regular course. It's so much easier to trade time for money in a one-on-one scenario. How do you avoid some of those pitfalls of the biases that we're seeing? Oh, there's so many out there already. There's so many of this. Who am I to charge that much money for a course? Like, what are some of the things you've seen and some of the advice you'd like to share for those listening that are like, I've been thinking about it, but there's this thing that's niggling in my brain that's keeping me from doing it?
I think 5 years ago, people were saying the same thing about podcasts being saturated, that there are so many podcasts out there. I couldn't possibly start a leadership podcast or a business podcast or whatever. And the trend has continued growing. There's so much room for great podcasts. And in the same way, there's so much room for great cohort-based courses. We are just at the beginning of that curve. So I think, you know, within certain circles, you're starting to see it everywhere. And that's great because most of the time people, you know, people see, oh, so-and-so is doing something. Maybe I should check it out. So right. That tends to be a good thing. But definitely don't let that discourage you from doing a course because, you know, 99.9% of the population still really doesn't know what a cohort-based course is. We're really just on the cusp. I think it's really, really exciting that creators are starting to catch on, though, because creators are, by nature, inventive creatures who like breaking the rules. And so one thing that we found from teaching the Maven Course Accelerator is we'll give creators a bunch of these frameworks, principles, foundational tactics and strategies and examples about here's what's worked for other people, here's what we've seen from a bird's eye view, and creators will take it and they'll learn, and then they will subvert and invert and just do their own thing, which I love. Like the last time we ran this over the summer, Julian Shapiro and Saul Bloom were in our course, and we at the time said, you know, most cohort-based courses are around 2 to 4 weeks long, which made sense because my experience building Alt MBA was 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Professor Galloway's course is 2 weeks. I helped design that course. I helped design Morning Brew. That was Morning Brew's accelerator. That was 8 weeks. And so it was kind of the few to several week range was kind of the time length. And Julian and Sahil said, okay, great. We're going to do a 3-day course. So, and we thought, okay, awesome. Like, let's see how it goes, right? Like, report back to the rest of us and we'll share the learnings with other instructors. And it turned out to be a smashing success. People loved how tight it was. People loved that they could focus on it for a few days and then move on with their lives, that it wasn't this, like, you know, huge, heavy thing. It worked really well with people with shorter attention spans. It allowed them to go deep really fast. And from that, we as an organization, Maven, learned that short courses can totally be successful. And then we share that with all the other Maven instructors and encourage them to explore doing shorter courses. And now a bunch of instructors are. So it's this really powerful powerful feedback loop. Mm-hmm. Because we have access and visibility into what so many different creators are doing, and we are pumping cohort-based courses into the market, that we can see, hey, what's working, what's not, what are trends of, you know, the things that instructors are and creators are experimenting with. And so, you know, since then, they've expanded 3 days into 1 week. They're in the middle of the course now. It's called audience building. So they're continuing to innovate and experiment with, hey, we did it 3 days, let's try it in a week. Like, let's see how that feels, right? A little bit more time with people, but still really tight. And that's just course length as a variable. There's also price points, right? Where do you want to be on that spectrum for a price point? There's also the ideal cohort size. Do you want something that's a little bit more intimate? You can charge a bit more for something that's, you know, a smaller group of people at a higher price point, for example, or you can do that same price point, but aim for a lot of people. Right? So you can keep certain variables constant, but move others. The amount of projects that you have in a course, do you want it to be more more interactive or a little bit less interactive? Do you want the community part to be a really big part of it, or learning more from the instructor to be a main part of it? So I have something that I call the course mechanics canvas that talks about 12 levers that, as a creator, you should think about these 12 levers because they influence what your student experience is and what your business model looks like. So there's just a ton of innovation happening in this space, and so much room for there to be multiple courses on a certain topic. I think lastly, just one more thing on that. If you Google, if you search on Amazon leadership books, you'll get 60,000 entries that come up.
Yeah.
And yet people are still writing books on leadership because you have a unique point of view. If you do, I mean, if you don't write a book on leadership, but if you do have a unique point of view on it, a spiky point of view, as I like to call it, and you have a core following who wants to learn from you, absolutely serve that audience, right? It doesn't matter that there's, you know, there's already been books about leadership, you know, from, you know, the CEO of Pixar or this, you know, CEO of GM has already written it. Like, it doesn't matter. The internet is a really big place for micro communities. So like, just think about all the subreddits that exist out there and how diehard the communities are, right? Like that totally applies to cohort-based courses.
Do you think that the advent of more work from home or remote work, especially, and I mean, we're gonna date this a bit right now, but because more people were learning from a distance due to COVID-19 and so on and so forth, to me, it seems like it probably helped accelerate some of this than you know, kind of put a halt to it, because it's becoming more standardized, let's say, or more acceptable. I don't know. In your experience, do you see that that's been the case? You know, hey, more people, this is the time, because people are more like, it's not such a foreign concept to them. Like, what do you mean I'm going to sit in front of a screen and not go to a classroom or not go to an event? I mean, I think in my opinion, these came along at just the right time. And now, like you said, they're innovating. Like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Back in 2015, when Seth and I first started the Alt MBA, the concept of meeting strangers online and paying $3,000 for a course where you weren't even going to meet in person, you weren't flying to a live workshop somewhere, you were entirely meeting people online, was really wacky. Right. Seth fans basically revolted. Like, when we told them we're going to charge this amount of money, Seth himself is not even going to be there. This is going to be community driven. This is going to be project driven. There's no live Q&As or real time with Seth. People were just shocked and horrified. And flash forward to today, with all the cohort-based courses out there and COVID, with Zoom and Skype and Slack becoming so much more ubiquitous, there is so much more appetite for learning online, for meeting strangers online, for realizing that this is not that weird. That, you know, I read an interesting article the other day that a lot of consulting companies that used to send people, you know, traveling Monday through Thursday every week, have realized that during COVID that they can actually cut out a lot of that. That yep. You can do a lot of business, you know, from Zoom. And so I think once COVID wraps up, you know, crossing our fingers, the behavior and the mindset shift is going to last.
Right. It was going to happen.
The shift has happened. Yeah. We're not going back to a time when we thought this was weird. This is considered normal now. And, you know, people might still do in-person stuff. Like, I'm excited about doing in-person stuff again. But they, I think, are going to be a lot more willing and excited about online learning, especially if they can learn from a creator where they otherwise wouldn't be able to access that person in person, right? So Lenny Rogitsky he was an early product manager at Airbnb. He teaches a course on product management on Maven. He's based in Mill Valley in California. And, you know, Pomp is based in New York. And we have instructors based in Denver, in Austin, in Amsterdam, in Asia. And, you know, normally you wouldn't be able to access that person then. Like, you know, flying there and all the trouble would just be too much. Or the person wouldn't want to go through the trouble of hosting an in-person event, which is also really heavy lift for, you know, a lot of, you know, you and your, a lot of your listeners probably done this.
Yep.
And so, but if, you know, if Lee can hop on line, if Lenny can hop online, if Pomp, Sean Puri, Sahil Bloom can hop online to teach, they are much more receptive to sharing their learnings and making their learnings accessible to their communities and to their students.
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business and even your family today. So as we get close to wrapping up, I want to touch base on something that I think is important for the person thinking about taking a cohort-based course. So someone who's like, I'll be point blank, the person listening to this right now might go, Mike, I've seen yours and I'm interested, but I'm hesitant because of X, because of the technology, largely because of the, like, how does someone get the most out of a cohort-based course if they're learning from it? And then we'll shift gears and talk about the creator side. But let's talk about the learner first. Like, someone taking a, if they're like, if they finally go, you know what? Yes. And they bite the bullet and they take it and they go, I'm going to take the leap, which may be huge or small, depending, again, like you talked about, price, time commitment, length of size of the group. What is one of those things that they need to think about, or something that you can offer that says, hey, listen, you know, you're taking that leap. Here's how you can get the most out of it.
With cohort-based courses, you definitely get out of it what you put into it. So if you are taking a cohort-based course and you plan on kicking up your feet, crossing your arms, sitting back, and waiting for the instructor to entertain you, waiting for all the other students to draw you in, that's not going to work. You have to go into it with the posture of being ready to be active, to be an active participant during this course. So one reason to not do a cohort-based course is if you just want content that you want to review on your own time, you don't really want to meet people, you kind of want to do it solo, MOOCs are a great option, self-paced, mm-hmm. evergreen courses. Do that. But if you want the accountability and the community and the participatory aspect and the hands-on piece of doing and the learning and the doing being synonymous, then that's really when doing a cohort-based course makes the most sense.
Now, for the creator, and I'll go from my vantage point. So the reason that my cohort exists is because I did one-on-one coaching and I did, you know, evergreen kind of courses. But evergreen courses don't have that interactivity like we talked about. And of course, one-on-one coaching only scales so far. You can only serve so many people before you start you can't pay as much attention to them, or you have to hike the price up. And then some people are like, whoa, 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 that's a bit too much for me. Whereas cohort-based courses fall nicely in that middle area for both of those. So if someone is sitting here, and I can tell you what I did, I mean, I obviously took elements of my one-on-one that was consistent, pulled that into my cohort, and then as well as some of the static courses, and said, oh, this stuff will do well based on feedback, and then obviously orchestrating it and iterating, like you said, and iterating. It's the tool set that I'm still working on. But I think you and I can have a conversation about that after the fact, about where maybe the tool set fits in. But someone who's a creator and they're like, I'm ready to do it. What do I do? Like, what's the best thing that I can do right now to kind of go, okay, I'm going to make that leap. I was doing, you know, this time for money one-on-one thing, or I was doing these courses and I'm ready to take it to that level. What's one thing that you think that they could do to kind of make sure that they're taking that first step in the right direction?
If you've been doing one-on-one coaching or you've created a self-paced course, you are halfway there to creating a cohort-based course. So the content of your course, the positioning, the course market fit, thinking about what someone wants to learn from you, what they're willing to pay for. If you've done a Skillshare, Udemy course, Teachable course, or you do one-on-one coaching, you already have real data points from people who have paid you to learn from you on this specific topic. And so that's half the battle. And so that's an amazing place to start. I think that cohort-based courses are, in some ways, a combination of the best parts of MOOCs plus coaching, one-on-one coaching. So you have the scale of MOOCs plus the premium price point that you can charge from one-on-one coaching, and the personal satisfaction for the creator of connecting really deeply with an individual. So yes. So you have a huge leg up. I would say that turning a pre-existing MOOC, an evergreen course, into a cohort-based course is a little bit like turning a movie into a Broadway play. Or a book into a movie, right? So it's like the change in the medium, there's a difference there, because, you know, in a movie, if you were to turn, you know, Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible, into a Broadway musical. There's certain things that you can do in movies that are harder to recreate in live theater, right? And vice versa. So, so you have that content, and that's awesome. And so now the next step really for people who have been doing the coaching, who have been, you know, been teaching different formats, is to think about how can I make my content more interactive and more community driven? So it's less one directional. It's less me lecturing at you and more me working with you and having, let's say, 25% lecture in a workshop, but 75% hands-on breakouts, exercises, etc., where your students are, they're experiencing that lesson as opposed to being told that lesson. Right. So that project-based piece, the interactivity, that's really the thing that if you add that, that's you're there with a core-based course.
And I imagine that if you're doing the one-on-one coaching, the key is to say, like, you can't be as customized or as precise with the individuals. You have to kind of find the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few in terms of the broad strokes. But then once you, the community kind of can help with that part of the, like, one-on-one, like this one person, because there's certain things when I've taught one-on-one coaching, like, hi, I'm a single mom and I've got two kids. I'm like, I'm not a single mom. I have two kids, but I can't. But then in a cohort-based course, there might be another single mom or there might be somebody who has that experience. So there's that element there too, which I think is, I was like, oh, that was a missing piece.
Yeah. The really exciting thing about core-based courses is that it's not one-directional. It's bi-directional.
Right.
Bi-directional meaning that, so one-directional is the instructor teaches everyone. Everyone sits passively listening. Bi-directional is that students teach the instructor back. And then they teach each other. So I've had so many instructors and creators say that they got breakthroughs and new ideas and sparked different ways of thinking because they saw so many other examples that their students brought up and talked about, edge cases, anomalies, you know, different ways to apply a certain concept, that it actually sharpened the creator's own thinking about their own frameworks, which is super, super exciting. And I think also your point about the community being able to jump in and help each other in potentially even more relevant ways than the instructor can help. That totally happens. And I think that it's a little bit of an adjustment for the creator sometimes, who is so used to being the center, that sometimes it's like, oh, wow, like I thought I was the only one who could solve your problem, but here are my other community members, my other clients who are jumping in and helping you and helping each other. So that is a little bit of a mindset shift for the creator to embrace. It's like, I'm still valuable. Like, even if I'm not the one answering everything, So I think that's a fun little aside.
It's interesting because it's either like, initially it's like, oh, and then it's either you try to lean in. And I know when I did my first one, I'm like, I was leaning in a bit. And then the second time I leaned back and I let it kind of happen organically. And then, because then I was listening. I think that's the other thing too, is that it allows you to listen more when you have those, because in a one-on-one situation or in a course, it's harder to listen because it's either constantly active or largely passive to a degree. And I mean, I'm mixing, you know, I'm kind of throwing some generic terms out there, but with that cohort-based course, it's like, oh, there, like you said, it's bi-directional. Things are happening at constantly, but you also can let the community kind of navigate some things on their own, and you can kind of be, to use a Marvel, the MCU, like the new What If series, you can kind of be the watcher every once in a while and go, okay, well, let's see what happens here, which I think is not it. Once you're used to it, it becomes very exciting. So as we wrap up, Wes, I want to just find out, where can people, I mean, first off, I'm excited about the future of cohort-based courses, and I'm really glad that you've found this like way to kind of create something for people who want to do them, but also for people who are like, I'm tired of going to like 18 different places to learn stuff. So where can people learn more about you, and where can people learn more about Maven?
You can learn more about me at weskao.com. I have a website where I've been writing a blog and newsletter for over 10 years. So a lot of learnings on core-based courses, on, you know, building the Alt MBA, on a bunch of stuff. And I'm also on Twitter at Wes_KO. And then Maven is at maven.com. And our Twitter handle is MavenHQ.
Wes, thanks so much for taking the time and having a productive conversation with me today.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks to Wes for joining me on the program. If you want to get all of the details that we talked about, show notes, details, helpful links, all that stuff, go to productivityist.com/podcast402. You'll find everything that you need there. And you can also look at the little device that you've got that you're listening to this on right now. Maybe it's an iPhone, maybe it's an Android device, maybe you're using Spotify, maybe you're using Apple Podcasts. While you're doing that, hit the subscribe button. That way you don't miss a single episode of what's to come, and you can easily search through the archives of past episodes, which are in the 400 count at this point. Episode 403 features a returning guest. John Meese is coming back to the show. That's going to be another great conversation that you do not want to miss. Another way to support the show, other than subscribing and leaving a rating and or review, is to check out our sponsors. Go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors. You'll find all of our sponsors there. You can find that through our show notes as well, including some of the sponsors you heard today. That's it for this edition of A Productive Conversation. Until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.